Or maybe I'm just jealous. Not because Sam hooked up with Six, but more because the love of my life is miles away. Of course, there's no way I'm expressing any of that in front of Nine, or Walker, and the silent FBI guy driving the car. Yeah. Let's focus on the mission. We're driving up I-95 from Washington to New York. Malcolm stayed behind at Ashwood Estates to finish going through the Mogadorian archives, hoping to turn up something else that might be useful. The vast majority of Walker's renegade agents stayed back, too. They're holding down the fort, using it as a base of operations to coordinate their efforts to undermine MogPro. I still don't entirely trust Walker's people, and I probably won't ever reach that level after everything the government put us through. So I left behind our 5 remaining Chimerae with orders to protect Malcolm at all costs. Besides Walker and our driver, there's another SUV filled with agents following along behind us. That makes a grand total of 6 agents, plus me, 9, and Sam. Not much of an army. But then, the war hasn't started yet. Maybe if everything goes according to my plan, it won't start at all. Secretary of Defense Sanderson is staying at a hotel in Midtown Manhattan, close to the UN, Walker says. She glances down at her phone, which she's been typing away on all morning. I had a mole on his security team, but...
But what?
They were pulled this morning, Walker replies. All his bodyguards replaced by a new team. Pale guys in dark trench coats. Sound familiar?
Mogadorians,
Nine says, grinding his fist into his palm.
Keeping their pet politician safe before his big sellout speech.
I think it actually works to our advantage, Walker says, looking at me. My people weren't looking forward to fighting through their own on the way to Sanderson. I mean, some of these guys are just doing their jobs.
Yeah, we aren't in the habit of fighting humans either, I say, giving Walker a pointed look. Unless they make us.
So that's the whole plan? Sam asks, skeptical. We go to this hotel, fight our way through a bunch of Mogs, and then kill this Sanderson guy?
Yes,
Walker answers.
No,
I say. Everyone looks at me. Even our stoic driver is staring at me in the rearview mirror.
What do you mean, no?
Walker asks, her eyebrows raised.
I thought we were clear on this.
We're not killing Sanderson, I say. We don't fight humans. We sure as hell don't kill them.
Kid, I'll pull the trigger if you get me in front of him, Walker replies.
You can arrest him if you want, I say. Charge him with treason.
The penalty for treason is death, Walker exclaims, sounding exasperated. Anyway, his MogPro cronies won't let an arrest go through. And you think anything in the courts is going to matter once Cetricus Ra is here?
You said it, I reply. Cetricus Ra is who's important.
Right. Instead of Sanderson, it'll be you guys there to greet him at the UN. We'll show the world the difference between good aliens and bad aliens. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, my people will dismantle MogPro.
Walker rubs her temples.
I've got other agents already in position. Around the time we take out Sanderson, a dozen other MogPro traitors will...
I cut her off. If you're about to tell me more assassinations, I don't want to know. Nine raises his hand.
I want to know!
That's not what we do, Walker, I continue. It's not what we're about.
Kid, you want to get the word out about the Mogs? Sooner or later, you're going to have to get your hands dirty.
And what if Sanderson gets the word out for us? Walker squints at me.
What are you talking about?
He's giving a speech at the UN, right? Going to talk up Cetricus Ra, tell humanity how it's safe to welcome the Mogadorian fleet? I shrug, trying to seem nonchalant about this, confident in my plan. Maybe he gives a different speech. Maybe he delivers a warning.
You're talking about turning him?
Walker exclaims.
This late in the game? You're out of your mind!
I don't think so, I reply, glancing left and right at Nine and Sam. My friends and I are pretty persuasive.
Yeah! Nine jumps in, grinning fiercely at Walker. I'm convincing as all hell!
Walker stares at me for a long moment, then turns around and goes back to typing coded messages into her phone.
I didn't realize I was teaming up with some hippy-dippy peacenik aliens, she sighs.
Fine. If you can talk Sanderson into flipping sides in front of the UN, go for it.
But if I'm not convinced, I'm shooting him.
Sure, I reply to Walker.
You're in charge.
We stop at a gas station in New Jersey to fill up the SUVs. Since I've got a few minutes alone, I decide it's a good time to check in with Sarah. I take out my phone and wander across the parking lot. As I do, I can feel Walker's eyes boring into my back.
Where are you going? She calls after me.
To call my girlfriend, I say, raising the phone. Remember? You illegally detained her that one time?
Oh, great,
Walker replies. I can hear her mutter to the driver.
We're depending on a bunch of horny teenagers to save the world.
Better us than people like Walker, I think, but pretend not to have heard her snide remark. The phone rings 5 times, each one causing my heart to beat a little faster, before Sarah answers, narrowly evading the dump to voicemail.
Before you say anything, she begins, not even saying hello, her voice shaky. I just want you to know that I'm okay.
What happened? I ask, trying to keep that first rush of panic out of my voice. I can hear the sound of traffic in the background. Sarah's in a moving car.
We went into town for supplies and had a run-in with some Moogs, Sarah says, still catching her breath. I guess they tracked us down somehow. Not too happy about the they walk among us thing. Don't worry, we're all fine. Bernie Kosar handled them.
Are you somewhere safe?
We will be soon, she replies. Mark's hacker buddy, Guard, gave us directions to his home base in Atlanta.
Mark had some details about Guard in one of his emails to Sarah. He's another conspiracy junkie, like one of those guys from the old version of They Walk Among Us. But he's also an excellent hacker and, according to Mark, has access to a surprising amount of information. It makes me a little nervous that Sarah and Mark are headed to meet him without us knowing his identity.
What does Mark know about this guy? I ask.
Sarah repeats my question to Mark. I can't quite make out his reply over all the noise from the road.
Mark says he's probably some nerd hiding out in his mom's basement,
Sarah repeats dryly.
But that he's a solid dude and that we can trust him.
I roll my eyes at Mark's scouting report.
That's heartening. Just in case, I'm going to text you the location of somewhere safe. It's a base in Washington that we took over, loaded with government guys who are on our side. If you need somewhere to run to, you could head there.
I hear 2 engines rumble to life behind me. I turn around to see all of Walker's agents piled into the cars. 9 and Sam still stand outside our SUV, waiting for me. 9 makes an impatient wrap it up motion.
What's going on there? Sarah asks me. On your way to do something stupid but possibly world-saving?
Pretty much, I reply, allowing myself a faint smile.
Did you get those documents I sent you?
Yeah, Sarah replies. We'll have a chance to upload them once we're in Atlanta.
Perfect. I've got a feeling They Walk Among Us is about to get a lot more hits.
I pause, reluctant to get off the phone.
The others are waiting for me. I've got to go.
Mark says to go kick some ass, and I love you.
Sarah catches herself laughing.
Mark didn't say that last part. That was for me.
We say our goodbyes, and I'm left with that same feeling of longing, mixed with dread that I get after every one of these phone conversations. I trudge back to the SUV. Everyone else is already inside except for Sam. So you're putting all of Walker's documents on the Walk Among Us? Sam asks. It's a good idea, like anti-Mogadorian propaganda.
It's a desperate idea is what it is, I say glumly. No one's going to be digging through search results while their cities are getting bombarded.
There's a comforting thought, Sam replies, frowning. But seriously, that's a lot of heavy reading. If you're trying to get people on our side, it shouldn't just be about the Mogadorians.
You shouldn't just be trying to scare people. They'll be scared enough as it is. You've got to give them some hope.
What do you suggest?
Sam thinks about it for a second, then shrugs.
I don't know yet. I'll come up with something.
I nod and pat Sam on the shoulder, the two of us climbing back into the car. I know he's just trying to help, and that's why I don't tell him that whatever he comes up with, it might be too late. We make it to New York about an hour later. I've never been here before, and neither have Nine or Sam. I wish our visit could be under different circumstances. As we inch along in heavy traffic through a canyon of skyscrapers, I find myself craning my neck to look out the window. Chicago is a huge city, but the frenetic jostle of pedestrians on the sidewalks here is something else entirely. There are flashing signs advertising Broadway shows, yellow cabs darting in and out of traffic, a hum of activity all around us. And these people have no idea what's heading their way. As we drive farther uptown towards Sanderson's Hotel, we pass a dude wearing a cowboy hat and underwear, strumming an acoustic guitar for a crowd of tourists. Nine snorts.
Look at this, he says, shaking his head. That shit wouldn't fly in Chicago.
I lean forward to get Walker's attention. Are we close?
A few more blocks, she replies.
I reach down to make sure my Lorik dagger is still fastened securely to my leg. I also touch my wrist, reflex telling me to check for my shield bracelet. Except that it's gone, destroyed by the general. Did your guy on the scene tell you how many Moogs we should be expecting? I ask Walker.
A dozen, maybe more.
That's nothing,
Nine says, pulling on the gloves that Marina gave him. He clenches his fists, and I inch away from him, wary that he's going to accidentally trigger some kind of weapon. Thankfully, nothing happens.
You're wearing those into a fight? Sam asks, eyeing Nine incredulously. You don't even know what they do.
What better way to find out? Nine replies. These Lorik things, man, they have a way of not helping you until you've given up on them.
Or maybe they're just for keeping your hands warm, Sam suggests.
Just don't do anything stupid, I tell Nine, and he stares at me, his expression getting deathly serious.
John, I won't, he says. For real. You can trust me out there.
I can tell Nine is still carrying around what happened down in Florida and is eager to prove himself. I just nodded him, knowing he wouldn't want me to make a big deal out of it. I'm glad he's got my back. Walker turns around to look at Sam.
These guys shoot fireballs and have magic gloves, apparently, but what do you do?
Sam looks momentarily taken aback, and I notice him reach down to touch the scars burned into his wrists. After a moment's consideration, he looks Walker in the eye.
I've probably killed more Moogs than you have, lady, Sam replies.
Nine elbows me, and I can't help but grin. To her credit, that actually looks like the answer Walker was hoping for. She opens the glove compartment, pulls out a holstered handgun, and holds it out to Sam.
Well, I'm officially arming a minor, she says. Do your country proud, Samuel.
A minute later, our driver pulls over to the side of one of Manhattan's quieter blocks, double parking. The other SUV rolls up behind us. Across the street and down the block a bit is the entrance to a posh hotel. There's a wide awning out front and a red carpet. A place for guests to turn over their car keys to a valet and drop their bags onto one of the waiting luggage carts. Except there's no activity outside the hotel. No tourists strolling the sidewalk, no valets waiting for tips. Nothing. Everything's been cleared away or scared off by the trio of Mogadorians standing guard at the door, their coats brazenly open to reveal the blasters hanging from their belts. It's like they're not even bothering to hide anymore.
"We want to do this quick and clean," Walker says to us, hunching low in her seat so she can look at the Moogs in her side-view mirror. "Take down the Moogs and get to Sanderson before they can send up an alarm, radio for backup, or whatever they do."
"Yeah, got it," I reply quickly. I pull up the hood on my sweatshirt so that it hides my face. "We've done this before."
"Let my people lead," Walker says.
"We'll flash some badges, maybe confuse them, then you hit them hard."
"Sure, you distract them," Nine says. "But then get the hell out of our way."
Walker picks up a walkie-talkie and radios to the agents in the second car.
"You guys ready?"
"Affirmative," a male voice answers. "Let's do this."
"Here we go,"
says an excited Nine and claps his gloved hands together. The concussion of sound that detonates from Nine's hands when he claps isn't quite sonic boom loud, but it's definitely close. It's like a thunderclap in the back seat. All of the SUV's windows explode outward, and the car even bounces a few inches into the air. The SUV behind us doesn't fare much better. Its windows also shatter, but inward, spraying the agents huddled inside. The windows of nearby storefronts break too, and a pedestrian walking by is knocked clear off her feet. Next to me, Sam is squeezing the sides of his head, looking dazed. For the first few seconds, I can't hear much except a low chirping that I soon realize is car alarms going off up and down the block. I turn to Nine, wide-eyed, and catch him staring at his gloved hands, also wide-eyed. I can't hear what he says, and I'm not much of a lip-reader, but I'm pretty sure it's... oops. At the entrance of the hotel, one Mogadorian is down on his knees, clutching his head. The other two are pointing right at our SUV, raising their blasters. So much for the element of surprise. Chapter 20. With the way my ears are ringing, I don't really hear the first volley of Mogadorian blaster fire, but I feel it. The SUV is rocked to the side as the jagged energy bolts shear across the car's bulletproof paneling. Walker huddles for cover behind the door, keeping her head down. Our driver isn't so lucky. A blast comes sizzling through the window and hits him in the side of the neck. His flesh is burned badly, and he immediately starts convulsing.
"Go!"
I shout, unable to hear myself and not sure if anyone else can either.
"Go!"
Nine rips open the back door of the SUV, literally. As he gets out of the car, he holds the door in front of him, using it as a shield to absorb the Moog's fire. I lunge into the front seat and press my hands onto the FBI agent's blaster wound, letting my warm, healing energy flow into him. Slowly, the injury begins to knit itself closed, and his convulsions stop. The agent looks up at me with wide, grateful eyes. I sense movement to my left and turn my head. Outside the driver's side window is the pedestrian who got knocked down when Nine's thunderclap went off. Energy flow into him. Slowly, the injury begins to knit itself closed, and his convulsions stop. The agent looks up at me with wide, grateful eyes. I sense movement to my left and turn my head. Outside the driver's side window is the pedestrian who got knocked down when Nine's thunderclap went off. She's a pretty college-age girl with big brown eyes. She looks shell-shocked and seems to be rooted in place. Except, she's not so stunned that she failed to get her phone out of her purse. She's just finished recording me healing our driver and is filming my face as I shouted her to run. Another volley of Moog blaster fire bounces over the hood of our SUV, nearly hitting the girl. Sam springs out of the back seat and grabs her, He drags her farther down the sidewalk and puts her in